The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Fire Breslow podcast presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Red Sox win their first game post-trade deadline in absolute onslaught at Fenway Park. 14-2, your final score. They crush Davis Martin and the White Sox. 14 runs on 15 hits, four bombs. Red Sox looking good post-deadline right away. I'm your host, Jason Kelly. I've got Doug and Matt alongside. Obviously, this one was all about the offense. We'll get to some of the pitching a little bit later. But Davis Martin, who has actually been pretty good for the White Sox for the most part this year, just absolutely ambushed right away in the first inning. Red Sox not wasting any time. Caleb Durbin with a grand slam to get things started. And then it just kept pouring on from there. So, Doug, what'd you see from the offense tonight? Pretty fun stuff, huh?
Yeah, really fun. Exactly the word I was going to use. It's just a fun... You know, it would have been a fun game to be at. That's a fun game to watch. Right away, Nick Sogard smashing the ball. Right, you know, first that back, getting that double. And then you just felt like he was coming in. Right, you know, right away when he hits that double, it's like he's coming in. Which going right away. And it was just, I think ambush is the perfect word for it, because, you know, before he looked up, he was down 6-0. And, you know, they were just all over him. They were aggressive with their at-bats. They knew what they wanted to hit, and they were picking their pitches, and they got it. And it was a fun inning to watch. And, the pitching was good along the way, but like you said, it doesn't matter. It's about the offense. It's about Abreu annihilating two balls. I mean, one over the bullpen is obviously a smash, and then straight away center. I mean, two bombs. It's just they were just rolling every which way. It was just a fun game.
Trying to get off mute here. It was a blast. That was a lot of fun. I mean, the game, it was an absolute ambush right out of the gates. You're right. Leadoff double, just starting that first inning, right? Leadoff double from Sogard was great. Great piece of hitting there. Sedan gets hit by the pitch. And then I think Willier had a nice piece there. Hits a ball to kind of left center. Bretton Doyle, new acquisition for the White Sox. I believe he's a Gold Glover. Very good defensive center fielder. Actually had a good put out there later in the game. Good assist as well. We are getting a taste of his own medicine trying to tag from first. But then, you know, Willier hits that D-fly ball. Sogard tags, gets to third, and you're thinking, here we go again. Another sacrifice hit. This team is just really good at playing the game of baseball. But instead, Contreras just... another dog at bat, fouls off a few pitches and then reaches out on the breaking ball outside the zone, drops it into left center. We get the first run. We don't have to use an out. Then Massa comes base hit first pitch next time around, which was kind of a crazy little piece of hitting there too. Montgomery just got caught off guard, flat footed there, couldn't make the play. Bases loaded, Durbin wastes no time, Yahtzee over the monster. And it was just incredible. They batted around the order that inning. And ironically had a double play to end that inning too. So double play to end both first two innings. So we kind of gave up a few outs, but it didn't matter. We had two innings this game where we scored six runs. I mean, how many times at Fenway did we not even score three runs in the entire game?
Yeah.
And tonight, two separate times, we scored six runs. We batted around completely two separate times. Willier with two bombs, the second one to dead center. Anytime you put one on a dead center at Fenway, that's an absolute poke. He hit one, another one. His first one was one of the deepest parts of the ballpark too, over the triangle. This team leads, you know, say what you want about the offense as a whole throughout the season from March till now, they lead the entire league in home runs since the All-Star break. It was 29 when that stat was reported. I believe that's 30 or 31 now after a couple of those bombs late. So what can you do? It was a hit barrage, 14 runs at the end of the day. The White Sox didn't stand a chance. I think my favorite part about the offense tonight, and the offense kind of during this run, during this hot stretch, 29-5, whatever the total is right now, you know, we've been scoring first, which completely changes the dynamic of the game. We've been putting together much better at-bats, grinding out at-bats, seeing a lot of pitches, getting into the underbelly of the bullpen and not the bullpen pitchers that the other team wants because we have the lead. But also anytime we get a, you know, a cushion or, you know, tonight it was a 6-0 lead. By the way, 7 batters into the game, we were up 6-0. So that's just unbelievable. I don't remember last time I saw that from the Red Sox. But every time that we get a lead, 6-0 in this game, we gave up one run. We come right back in the bottom inning and we got that run back. Then we gave up another run and it was 7-2 and we came back and dropped 6 on them. So I really love every time we get punched, we come out and punch back. And I think that's really huge. I just think, you know, the team is just riding an all-time high and hitting is certainly contagious and they really have a lot of belief in each other. So just an offensive barrage. I wasn't expecting that tonight, but it was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, they ride emotions. This team definitely rides on the emotions, and it looks like Contreras kind of is the leader of it. But they're a vibes team, big time.
Duran with another home run as well.
Yeah,
that's back.
Yeah,
that was a bomb home run.
That was a bomb.
You know, OPS isn't there, average isn't there, but he's finding ways to drive in runs. The defense has been okay. Obviously, we didn't make a move for an outfielder outside of Eli White yesterday, so it sounds like Duran's our guy. Maybe we get Roman Anthony back. He's swinging a little bit. I'm not counting on that just yet, but good to see Duran showing some signs of life. I've said it a few times already on this podcast. If he can get hot, if he can tap into a little bit of that player that we've seen in 2024, even last year, that's a huge addition to the lineup or a huge you know, pump to the lineup there.
Yeah, the offense doing what they're doing, it's really twofold, and it's the approach. And every time this offense has played this way and they've, you know, they've come out and scored a bunch of runs, you can tell that they were so prepared. And they've faced Davis Martin before, so they're familiar with him. And I think they actually roughed him up last time, too. So they're familiar with him. And they were hunting him. They were absolutely hunting, you know, like you guys said, the pitches that they wanted. That Durbin Grand Slam, he loves that pitch. That pitch right below the knees, a little bit in, that's his sweet spot. The Duran home run, same thing. Breaking ball right in his wheelhouse. So the game plan was obviously great. Their approach was great. With a lineup like this, that's what they need, right? Because they're not the most naturally powerful lineup, right? A lot of these guys are going to need to really run into one. But if you game plan and you approach it that way, that's how it can get done. And that's why they're able to score, you know, 14 runs on 15 hits, because it's just they had the game plan all set, not just for Martin, but for Eric Fetty as well, who they're also familiar with. So it's that. And then the second part is what you guys brought up. It's the emotions. It's the vibe, if you want to call it that. Because I do think they run on emotions. And I think the trade deadline is probably the most stressful part of the season for a lot of these guys. I mean, look at the comments Jaron Duran made the last 24 hours about how he not only thought he was going to get traded, but then he's like, well, if they don't trade me, they might just cut me because I've been so terrible. So he's sitting there with a storm swirling in his head thinking, I'm not going to be on this team by Tuesday. Like they're gonna get rid of me. So a guy like that, who already we know it's so easy for him to get in his own head, for a guy like that to not be traded, and for the reports that the organization like Chad Tracy and all them sat down with him and said, no, like you're staying and like we're sticking with you, that's a huge emotional boost for a guy like that. And look, 2-for-4 tonight, hit an absolute bomb. You know, if he starts to turn around because, you know, he just has that weight lifted off his shoulder, then that's, you know, better than any trade deadline acquisition you could have made. If you get, you know, a glimpse of 2025 Duran or maybe 2024, like you get that kind of guy back in this lineup, that's huge. So I think a lot of these guys are just breathing a little bit easier. Trade deadline's passed. The team was aggressive. They went out, they got guys, they improved the roster, and now they go, okay, that's all done. Now we can just focus on who's in front of us, who are we facing tomorrow, and we can simplify things and go from there. And I think that's going to be huge for this lineup.
Yeah, and just good on the clubhouse, the team in general, for kind of rallying behind him. It was about a week ago where he, you know, had his antics in Sacramento and everyone was calling for his head. But Tracy had his back publicly, Contreras had his back publicly, and then inside those four walls where none of us are privy to hearing those conversations, it seems like they rallied around him, they believed in him, and they said, "Hey, man, don't worry about it. We know you've got it in you. Just keep doing what you're doing. We got your back." And I think we're starting to see, you know, some of the benefits of that. Another thing too, Jason, just because you mentioned the game plan, I totally agree. The at-bats that we've been seeing from the team put together top to bottom those last few weeks have really made all the difference offensively for us. I don't know what it is. There's reports of that drive line, you know, being out of the org for, I guess, a few months now. And maybe that, I don't see that as just a coincidence. I do think they made some tweaks to their approach, but it doesn't seem to matter who they put in that leadoff spot. Sogard, Siegler, Masataka Yoshida, whoever they put in that leadoff spot is making an impact, is getting things done right away, you know, and it's kind of setting the tone for the rest of the lineup to come. And one of the shows I was on previously, I didn't even realize this, but somebody called out that the Sox are like 21-2. Jason, it might have been you. The Sox are 21-2 or something when Massa starts the game. We added another win to that column tonight. So I don't know if that he's making all the difference. But, yeah, the approach definitely seems to have changed a bit. And, you know, it doesn't seem to matter who we put in that leadoff spot. They all seem to be getting the job done. So setting the tone and you know, scoring early really does make a big difference.
Yeah, especially with Sadon in the two spot. When that leadoff guy gets on, if he gets a double, I mean, I was like, Sadon's hitting him in right now. Like, I was pretty confident that he got pegged. But I think if he didn't, he probably would have. I really felt like that. And, you know, and they still got him in. But, you know, Sadon is just on another level right now and, you know, looking like the best center fielder in the game at this point.
Yeah, that Rafaela contract is looking really sweet right now. Yeah. Because, man, I mean, they got to him early, and he just continues to get better and better. And it's funny, like, the only way you can stop him is you got to bean him. I mean, that's it, because otherwise he's, you know, he's just being really productive at the plate. And that's kind of, like, sneaky. I kind of liked that they picked up a guy like Eli White, and I liked that their explanation was, look, you know, we want to give Sadon a breather every now and then. And, you know, a game like tonight, you're up 14-2. Yeah, take him out of center field. Let him rest his legs a little bit, because Rafael has broken down a little bit in the second half through his career. He's not the biggest guy. So, you know, that's bound to happen. And look, playing center field is a very demanding position, and he plays it very well. So I'm glad that they got some depth there to kind of help with that. But, you know, go ahead, Matt. Yeah.
No, I just, it's a good call out, because I thought the Eli White trade was a little out of the blue. I didn't really understand it. We gave up a guy that really wasn't contributing at the major league level, but we get this guy back. Obviously, offensively, a lot of blue in his Avant chart, known for a defense and speed type of guy. But, you know, all of a sudden, then I started to think about it. Well, man, I haven't seen Sadon get a day off in center field in a while. I haven't seen anybody else playing right field in a long time. Suddenly, this logjam that we all came into this season kind of complaining about, to be honest, all of a sudden now we kind of don't have a ton of depth in center field and or in the outfield in general. Obviously, Duran's had some struggles. We've had a bit of a revolving door, if you want to say that, at left field. But yeah, Sadon and Willier really haven't had a lot of time off in those positions. So from that perspective, I do like the addition of a little bit of outfield depth. And I just have this weird feeling, so I kind of want to call it out now, that Eli White will have kind of a signature moment in a Red Sox uniform, whether it's like a big defensive play, a big diving play in a clutch moment, or I call it out in the war room, right? A Dave Roberts type impact, a big steal late in the game. I really do think there'll be a signature moment where we'll all say, yeah, that was a good move. That was a good pickup. It's not, you know, necessarily a needle move or impact, but I think he's going to have a signature moment in a Red Sox uniform at some point in the future, probably later in the season, potentially in the playoffs. It looks like we're heading that way. So, you know, I'll take all the depth right now. I'm kind of, you know, understanding a little more about the philosophy, right? We all want stars, but it's really not your top 9 or 10 guys that win you the World Series, or candidly, even your top 26. It takes a full 40-man roster. And, you know, a lot of these guys we've called 4A guys along the way, but they're getting their opportunities. They're getting the job done. And I really just think that's an ode to the depth of the roster, top to bottom, 1 through 40. Key, you know, that 20 through 40, I would put our 20 through 40 up against anybody else's 20 through 40. And throughout the course of 162 game season, I think that does have make it pay dividends throughout the year.
Yeah, I like that. I like that prediction. You know, I can see it. I'm a big fan of having a guy on the team like that, that, you know, even though everyone knows he's coming in to steal, can still get the bag. I think that's very valuable.
Yeah, and just because it was a really small move on the margins doesn't mean it's not a good move. And right. I mentioned it last night. The guy who gave up was Tyler Uberstein, who's a 27-year-old depth starter. And, you know, he's not part of your future. He's not one of your top prospects. He's kind of a journeyman. He's been down there for a long time. And he's going to be in the Rule 5 over the winter. So, and I doubt the Red Sox are going to use a 40-man spot to protect him from that. So they knew they were losing him anyway. And here's Eli White, who, yeah, is a speedster with a really good glove. That's a valuable thing to have on your bench. Yeah, the bat may not be great, but who cares? If he can, you know, as you guys mentioned, swipe a bag for you late in a game, or you put him in defensively and he makes a great play, then, you know, that makes it all the worthwhile. So just because a move is small and it kind of happens last minute doesn't mean that it's not going to have, you know, a good impact on the team. So, yeah, I liked the idea of going to get him. And in terms of the conversation about the offensive approach, I think you can really go back to the report that said that Theo Epstein was disappointed in sort of the direction of the organization and that he felt like they were going too analytical. Because I feel like after that report is when things slowly started to turn around, and then they went into July and they just went completely bananas. I think that report was more like they made a change. Like Theo, because again, Theo's part ownership, and I think that, you know, he got together with Henry and those guys, and they got together with Breslow and said, look, we gotta shift gears here. It can't be all driveline because it's not working for half this roster. So I think they made some internal moves that maybe we don't know about that weren't reported, because to turn things around that drastically, it's not just because Caleb Durbin remembered how to play baseball, right? Like, this guy was, you know, getting rookie of the year votes last year. So it really is that they obviously changed the approach and they changed how these guys prepare for each pitching matchup in each game. And whatever they did, keep doing it, because the offense has never been better all season than it is right now.
Yeah, and
all credit to Tracy.
Go ahead, Dougie.
Yeah, just a lot of credit to Tracy, you know, for clearly making a move, making a switch. And if it comes from the top down, you know, at least he implemented it, you know, clearly the right way. And they're really taking after his way of playing, with sacrifices and stealing and playing some small ball and playing the small ball in front of the power hitters and not having the solo home runs that we were having early in the season, and getting guys on for these guys to hit, you know, multiple run home runs. And it's really clicking.
Yeah, it's an interesting point too that you bring up Theo, because you think about some of those Red Sox teams of his era, right, when he was truly at the helm. And obviously we had a ton of talented offensive players at that time, ton of power hitters, some Hall of Famers, a ton of all-stars in that bunch, right? I don't even have to name them. We all know who they are. But one of the strategies and one of the reasons those guys were so effective back in the day was they were absolute grinders when it came to their at-bats. They were not chasing bad pitches. They were fouling them off. They were working deep in counts, seeing 5 or 6 pitches per at-bat. And that just wore out the starting pitcher every time. All of a sudden, they got 90 pitches in the 4th or 5th inning. And the next thing you know, even if you're not scoring runs doing that, you're knocking that starter out early. And in this case tonight, obviously, this was, I believe, the White Sox best starter for one. We actually got to him. I thought we got to him 5 runs last time we faced him in Chicago. But hey, once you, it's a lot easier to hit against their long relief bums versus their top of the arm, top of the bullpen elite arms that they bring in when they have a lead and they're trying to shut the door on you. So again, just going back to seeing a ton of pitches, getting that starter out of the game early, and having them, forcing them to pull in some of their bottom of the rotation, call it relief pitchers, because they're playing from behind, not allowing them to come in and execute with their better relievers to hold the lead, I think really just makes a difference on the outcome of the game. and obviously makes it easier to hit and score runs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you can jump on that guy, you know, and really put the stress on him early, and I was surprised they kept Martin in as long as they did, but I guess I understand it. They're trying to save their bullpen a little bit. They have a little more depth now after getting Castillo. So Eric Fetty, who was a starter, goes to the bullpen. That doesn't exactly give you a Bayo-type performance out of the bullpen, unfortunately for Chicago. But hey, we'll take it. That was fun to pile on late.
And on top of that, not only early in the games, early in the series, right, Jason? So we've tapped into their bullpen. You're going to exhaust their bullpen in game one of the series. They still have two games to go, like you said. So now the pressure is on their starters to continue to try to go deeper into the game tomorrow and Thursday versus if I think that's why they tried to leave the starter in, you know, to try to save the bullpen, understanding that, hey, this game's probably out of reach and we don't want to use up our entire bullpen tonight. We still have two more games to go against these guys.
Yeah, definitely. Let's see. Doug jumped out, but we'll see if we'll get him back. But while we wait on that, on the pitching side for the Red Sox, nothing to really complain about. Patrick Sandoval ends up giving you five innings, a little bit shaky at times, load the bases a couple of times, four walks, five Ks, but only allowed one run. So he really, you know, he did his work. And this is a guy that, you know, we weren't sure about. We're not sure what you can really get out of him. You know, obviously the long recovery from the Tommy John, but I feel like he's been more than serviceable. And I feel like tonight he did his job. You know, he kept them off base. He kept them off balance. That changeup was working really well. It's just that sometimes the control can get away from him. He tries to be a little too nitpicky and, you know, lets a few too many guys on base. So, you know, that was really the only downside, is that he got a little bit, you know, nitpicky and the pitch count went up, but five innings, you know, pretty good baseball from Patrick Sandoval tonight. So, Matt, I'll start with you. How did you feel about his performance and performance of even, you know, Bale and all those guys after that?
Yeah, serviceable probably sums it up, right? I think Sandoval has been giving you enough to win the games. In fact, this was his sixth start of the season, I believe, and the Red Sox have won every single one of his starts. So he's not tearing it up. He tonight gave you five innings, which was a season high for him. He's never given you more than five. But with the way the offense scored, you know, five was enough. Definitely flirting with some trouble. A lot of those innings had a lot of base runners on, got a double play early in the game, got bases loaded, I think, in that fourth inning. So a lot of traffic on the base passes, but he found ways to get out of it. Too many walks for my liking tonight. I think he's got a 3.38 ERA now after tonight's start. That's pretty good, but his whip is 1.67. So again, tonight is just a typical start, I guess, based on those numbers, right? A lot of traffic on the base pass, but finding ways to get the outs when he needs them. I guess I can't complain about Sandoval. He's going to be our fifth starter. He's depth. It's good to see him kind of come out and just, like I said, give us a chance to win. His second start, I think, against the Rays, he gave up four runs, but outside of that, he hasn't given up more than two runs in any of his starts. So I actually have it up. It's one run, four runs, 0-2-2. So, you know, not going deep into games just yet, but giving us a chance to win. And fortunately tonight we had such a big lead. Weissert got in a little trouble. Great to see Eric Miller, our newest dog out there. Man, wasn't that bad? Was that a three or four pitch strikeout? This guy seems legit. I candidly had not heard of him until we actually got this guy. Never heard of him. But then I pulled big up his spot chart and just, yeah, huge guy, 6'5", yeah, something. Yeah. Absolute dog. You've seen the highlights of him yelling at the Reds. And speaking of red, his Savant chart is bloody red. It's all red. So we love to see that. I think it was a good move to add him to the bullpen. I kind of wanted a starter, not to get back into the deadline. I know you guys covered it all last night, but he adds depth, and that just shortens the game. And nights like tonight where your starter only gives you five, you can bring that guy out. You have so many good options to bring out of the bullpen. And then, of course, bullpen Bayo, man. I don't know what it is, but the guy is nails out of the bullpen. He's, I think, statistically the worst starter in the league with a minimum of whatever the minimum is, 35 innings. And then the statistically best reliever in the league, minimum 35 innings, whatever that threshold is. So complete enigma. I said it before. I don't understand it, but I don't have to understand everything in the universe. I just like that he's coming in, closing the door, gives you three strong at the end of the game. Obviously helped us win that first game of the series versus the Dodgers. So I have to give credit to Tracy. I guess, you know, Bailey as well, and even Breslow, even, right? They made the decision to change him a little bit. They moved him to AAA and then brought him back up in relief duty. They tried to give him two starts among those stretches, and those were his two worst outings. So, yeah, I just think about it this way. Would Cora have ever done that? Would Cora have ever made a change like that and made an adjustment like that with Bayo? So just, you know, it's a game of adjustments, and that one is certainly paying off. I'm no longer shaking when I see Bayo come into the game. So overall, strong pitching performance, two runs given up at the end of the day. Yeah, strong pitching performance. We know the pitching is legit this year.
Yeah, I think Bayo deserves a lot of credit too for, you know, I think we talked a lot about him being a mental case, you know, him being, you know, kind of a head case, you know, gets in his head a lot. And, you know, to have, you know, the capacity to say, okay, I'm going to take a step back from being a starter after, you know, being the opening day starter just a few years ago, and I'm going to step back and I will take the bullpen route and I'll be great at it. And I think he deserves a lot of credit to just, you know, being a part of the team and kind of, you know, doing, I think a lot of people thought he's selfish at times, and, you know, he's showing a lot of, you know, a lot of pride in the team, a lot of pride in himself, and he deserves a lot of credit for that alone.
Yeah, I give Bayo a lot of credit too, because it's got to be the most difficult thing to basically be told, like, you can't be a starter. And it's partially your own fault, but it's also just because they have such good pitching depth that he's going to get pushed to the pen. If he could just figure out why that is, because every time they show the side-by-side of his numbers as a starter versus a bullpen, it's insane. I mean, it's like Garrett Whitlock levels of, you know, when they tried to mess around with him being a starter, and we all on this podcast said, stop doing it. You can't hack it as a starter, put him in the bullpen because he's elite in there. And finally, thank God they figured that out. With Bayo, you know, I'm not saying he has to go that route, but who knows? I mean, maybe that is his future. And look, the Red Sox have the control here because they have him under contract. So, you know, he's still signed to that extension. So they could say to him, look, we think we could turn you into an elite reliever. Because look, if you can't figure out, you know, this first inning stuff, then that might be the route we have to go. And you know what? If I'm Brian Bayo and I'm pitching that well out of the bullpen, you know, you do a couple of years of that as, you know, an elite reliever and his contract comes up again, he can make bank. I mean, you know, you'll make more money as a starter, sure, but if you can't figure it out, you won't. But if you end up becoming a, you know, late inning, you know, kind of threat like that, he can get a big contract. So hopefully someone's advising him like, hey, this, you know, I know you don't like being in the bullpen, but you're fantastic out of there. And maybe that's just the way it should be for him.
Yeah. Yeah. I see you, Jules, in the comments, 90 wins. Jules wanted to set me on fire when I said we could win 88 wins at the beginning of the season.
If it makes you feel any better, Dougie, I have an open preseason bet for over 87 and a half wins. So we're both for the same thing there. And I think we're back on track. We're back on pace. But yeah, and final thoughts on Bayo, just really quick. Kudos to him for showing some mental fortitude, right? It's a mental game. And he definitely could have taken his ball and gone home and said, I can't do this. I'll do AAA, release me, whatever. But ultimately, this is good. This is a good thing for the Red Sox. It's a good thing for Red Sox fans. We still have him under control for, what, 3 or 4 more seasons. So whether he turns out to be able to – we have time to figure him out as a starter as well. I don't think you touch it this season. I think this season you let it go the way it's going. It's not broke. Don't fix it. But you're starting to see signs of life. You're starting to say, hey, he can perform on a major league mound. We just still need to continue to tweak and figure this out. And maybe 27 or 28 or 29 – we can figure out how to turn him back into a starter, but we've already seen some formulas where teams go with the opener, they go with these bullpen games. So again, back to my kind of 26-man roster spiel from before, it's kind of the same thing with a pitching staff, right? Does it, you know, it's great if you have two horses at the top of your staff, but it's also great if, you know, pitchers 1 through 9 or however many you carry on your roster, 12 pitchers are all quality guys 1 through 12, right? So top to bottom. So I think ultimately, no matter how you slice it, it's a good thing for Bayo. It's a good thing for the Red Sox. And hey, relievers get paid too. What do the top line relievers get? 10 million, 15 million. Haters getting 20. I'm not going to compare him to that, but a good reliever will get 10 or 12 million. So yeah, he's still plenty young. And right now he's helping us win ball games. And like I said, it's good for the Sox that he's figuring it out and he's figuring out how to pitch well.
Yeah, with Bale, Red Sox have him under contract through 2029. They have a club option on him for 2030. So assuming, and that's it's at $9.1 million, you know, each year. So by then, you'll definitely know what he is. Is he a reliever? Is he a future closer? Or does he go back to being a mid to, you know, late rotation kind of arm? Also, the thing about Bayo is that that contract is extremely tradable. So if he pitches really well out of the pen and you want to make some offseason moves, you can kind of sell that to other teams as, look, he's still under 30 and he still has good stuff. He just has to figure out up there, right? So I think in general, the Bayo development, it was wonky at first, you know, sending him down to Worcester. He obviously wasn't happy, made those comments about, you know, I'm not a reliever, I'm a starter, blah, blah, blah. But this is what happens when you win, right? When you keep winning like this and you put yourself back in the playoff race and you put yourself firmly as one of the best teams in the American League now, guys like Brian Bayo will go, well, you know what? We keep winning, so fine. Okay, I'll pitch out of the bullpen. You know what? I'm making my money. We're winning games. I get to pitch in October. Sure, no problem. We'll go back to the whole starter versus reliever thing in the winter if we have to. But this is why winning is a great Band-Aid for a lot of stuff like that. And it's a great Band-Aid for, you know, Roman Anthony and Garrett Crochet being out most of the year. And luckily, we got some good news on both those fronts. Crochet is now throwing from 50 to 60 feet. Roman Anthony took actual batting practice from a coach today. So, you know, those are signs that those guys are getting a little bit closer. And, you know, the more they keep winning and the more that those guys get closer, the more it looks like you could end up being one of the best, if not the best team in the American League. It's going to be tough to get past the Rays. You know, the Rays were aggressive at the deadline as well. They didn't mess around either. But, you know, Crochet, Anthony, Rutschman, they're all on the way. So let's see.
If they come back, and I mean, if they can come back and play for 3 weeks and they actually look good, Roman's hitting the ball like we think he can, Crochet's pitching like Crochet, I think we would be the favorite coming in.
Yeah, I think
I'm not saying that I think that will happen. It's obviously a big
totally,
but that's two potentially big pieces.
They're arguably our two best players, right?
Obviously, I trust Crochet more.
Yeah,
I do think if Crochet comes back, I trust him to be very good. I don't really have any doubts.
At least coming into the season, you would have said they are two best players, probably, right?
And we have to see it with Roman, I think, you know, when he comes back. But I'll trust Crochet right away.
I agree. I think if Roman does come back, he might be a little bit rusty, might take a little bit of time to catch his groove. Yeah. So probably a little bit longer leash there in terms of if he doesn't come out of the gates hitting, I'm not going to go right back to this guy's a bust. It's a hard game to play. It's hard to hit that baseball. I think if either of them come back, Crochet is probably more likely to show signs of his former self right out of the gates than Roman. But definitely great. Encouraging to hear some positive reports today about that. I'm not putting a ton into that because I just can't put a ton of into some of these reports that come out. I mean, the deadline had reports swirling. We've heard this before. And especially with those two guys on their injuries, we thought that they'd be back a long time ago by now. So I'm, you know, reserving some judgment there. But there's one thing that was struck to me coming out of the deadline yesterday. We didn't end up with an outfielder. We got Eli White, but, you know, we didn't bring him in for offense. And we didn't land a starting pitcher, right? Two areas where I thought we probably could bolster up, especially on the starting pitcher front. So that tells me that they think we have something in the works, or a guy like Crochet could be coming back. Hauk and Oviedo have been reports of them coming back. Maybe there's some other guys in AAA that we don't even know, similar to Jake Bennett, that they're really high on, where they were like, we can move some of our pitching depth. We don't have to bring in a starter. They might know something we don't and now we're hearing good positive signs. Crochet's throwing baby steps, but also a big step in that phase. And yeah, I think the same thing with outfielder, right? We all wanted an upgrade in left field. We all wanted Durant to be moved, but them not making that move kind of makes me think, hey, maybe they think Roman's coming up. Obviously, Campbell was the offensive player of the month in July, for what that's worth, in AAA. But you know, I think ultimately, not to spend again too much time on the deadline, they improved a huge area of need at the catcher position, but them not finding ways to get another starter or get that other corner outfielder, I think kind of tells me that, hey, they must know something we don't, and putting a little bit of faith in potentially Roman and Crochet coming back. I'm not going to go ahead and set my expectations there just yet, but I want to leave that as a nice to have. I would love to see those guys come back and contribute, because certainly talent, certainly talented individuals that can probably help this club win some games.
Yeah, no, to that point, I think that's why, you know, and people were upset that they didn't add a shortstop, right? They were in on Zach Nato, they were in on CJ Abrams, and I said on the deadline show last night, I think it's because those teams asked for Arias and Arias plus. And I think the Red Sox balked at it because they said, you know what, we could make that trade, but Arias could be just as good as Zach Nato or CJ Abrams, potentially even better. He's only 21 and he's already at AAA, you know, smoking home runs and hitting 110 mile an hour singles off the bat. So I think, you know, to your point, Matt, about, you know, they sort of know something we don't. I think they look at Franklin Arias and go, he can help us in September. Like he's that good right now. And Alex Spear mentioned it on the broadcast when Merlone asked him about it. He said, look, in this organization, if you're in AAA, they consider you part of the big league depth, meaning that, yes, they are absolutely looking at Arias saying, yep, he could help us at some point if we need an extra bat. But the way the offense is going, they kind of don't right now. So let him settle into AAA and let him keep developing. But I wouldn't be surprised if you see that kid in September.
Not only that, I actually think the asking price for some of those shortstops must have been ridiculous. So I'm not too – everybody's already up in arms for what we gave up for Adley. So I can only imagine what we'd be saying if we give up Arias for Neto or something like that. So on top of that, though, it's not exactly a black hole at shortstop. Monasterio has been lights out, at least offensively. We know he needs some improvement defensively. When Chang was up here, he was kind of the opposite. He gave you good defense, not a lot of offense. I really don't want anything to do about Story coming back, but he's supposed to come back healthy. And again, I can't believe I'm saying this, but IKF was serviceable coming out of shortstop too. He should be coming back and, you know, not moving the needle offensively, but he was batting .277 with a .344 on base percentage. So, you know, that's a perfectly fine utility player for him too. So it's not exactly a black hole. And yeah, I'd love to see Arias come up, but also with the lockout looming, I believe if they add him to that 40-man roster, then there's some kind of stipulation that if we do get locked out next year, he won't be able to join the facilities or something like that, or actually do work with the team or the club. But candidly, I'm not worried about next year. If he can come up and help us win games this year, I'm all for it. I just hope they don't rush him because they didn't move a shortstop now, so they rush him up. Let's be patient on that position. That's not exactly a black hole or as big, you know, of an issue, I think. I mean, we scored 14 runs tonight, so we're doing okay offensively right now. But yeah, room for improvement from the shortstop position for sure. It's definitely an upgradable position. And just really quick, since you mentioned it, we definitely are in play for the American League right now. The Rays did get a little bit stronger. They're definitely not going to be an easy out. And the Guardians, I don't want to sleep on them. They made some good moves yesterday, so I think they're going to make a chance for it. I shouldn't say this publicly, but not too scared of the Yankees right now, at least as it stands, unless they get some guys healthy. So, you know, right now I like our chances with the team that we have compared to our competition, at least in the American League. And it should be a fun couple months here as we close out the season.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think the AL is in play. I really do. I think that, you know, especially if they get some guys back. There's no reason why it couldn't be them. So, but as we always say, you got to take it sort of one game at a time. Obviously, looking at the August schedule, Red Sox could really put together a good month here because, yeah, you got the White Sox right now, who you seem to do fine with. You know, they're a good team, but the Red Sox seem to handle them. You've got the Athletics this weekend. They are still banged up. They didn't have a good deadline. You've got Toronto, who sold pieces after that. You've got Pittsburgh, who's meh. You got the Marlins after that. Like, they could really clean up this month on some bad competition, you know, especially post deadline. So, you know, hopefully they take advantage of that.
I think we passed the Yankees this month.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the schedule on paper is looking a lot easier this month. It felt like we went through the buzzsaw. I still can't believe the run that we went on. I guess that's now 15-0 against some of the top eight teams during that run. We've been over before. We swept the White Sox in Chicago, the Yankees at home, the Rays at home, the Dodgers on the road, and now we won this first game versus the White Sox. So, but we're playing very good against teams above 500, which you love to see because that's who you're going to see if you do make the playoffs. But also no more West Coast road trips. I know as a podcaster, I'm happy about that. We've been up late a couple of these times trying to cover some of those games, but is it four West Coast road trips that we had? And we were the best West Coast Red Sox team I think I've ever seen. We usually struggle when we go out West, but I also don't think I've seen four separate trips out to the West Coast, but really glad that those are behind us. And yeah, it's going to be the dog days. I said that on the last show. We all know what it's like in August. So this is when you want to start playing your best baseball. And the schedule definitely sets us up for an opportunity to continue to keep this thing rolling.
Yeah, 100%. Well, they got to keep it rolling tomorrow. And this is going to be a tough one. So again, another 7-10 start. Sonny Gray going for the Red Sox, but he's going up against Sean Burke, who has been absolutely filthy for the White Sox this season. He's coming off of back-to-back 10 strikeout performances, one against Houston, one against the Yankees. So, and Sonny Gray, last couple of starts, has been a little bit shaky. So not sure how we feel about this one. Doug, I'll start with you. How do you feel about tomorrow?
I feel great about it. let's go. Sonny Gray back on track. The offense is rolling. I don't care who's on the mound. Where they're nervous taking the mound after a game like this, after seeing us, you know, what we're doing. We're putting fear into teams, into pitchers, and our pitchers are taking the mound with full confidence. And I think Sonny Gray gets back on track at home, and we keep this train rolling.
We didn't have to ask Dougie. We knew what he was going to say. He always goes sweep, and you know what? He's been on the money lately, so good for you, Dougie. I want to pick them tomorrow, but just the baseball fan in me understands kind of the law of averages, right? And I just think we are just due for a loss. I hate to say it. I know we just dipped into the bullpen early tonight. Jason, your numbers, I didn't realize. I don't know a ton about this White Sox starter tomorrow. Gray has looked like he's been stumbling a little bit, just not as crisp as he was for most of the beginning of the season here. I'll pick the White Sox tomorrow and the Red Sox to come back and win the rubber match in game three, because I do like the matchup a lot on Thursday. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Red Sox win tomorrow. I'm all for it. Give me another sweep. But the overall understanding of how baseball works, you know, no team, just this run, I still kind of can't believe it. So I think we're due for a loss tomorrow, but it shouldn't disrupt us in the long run. So I think we win. We circle back with another win after that. We take two out of three here versus the White Sox.
Yeah, I would love to pick a sweep, but I the only thing I worry about with tomorrow is, you know, with the right-hander Gray being on the mound, the White Sox are going to put some of those left-handed hitters back in the lineup. So you'll probably see Benintendi tomorrow. You'll see Tristan Peters tomorrow. I think they'll have a slightly stronger lineup against a righty than they did tonight against Sandoval, and then they will Thursday against Ranger Suarez. So, yeah, I think the White Sox will get to Gray a little bit. Again, I would love for Sonny Gray to go back to pre-All-Star game Sonny Gray, where he was, you know, should have been on the team and was pitching like a Cy Young. If he does that, then that's great. But last couple of starts have just been a little too shaky for me. And I don't know what to expect against Sean Burke, you know, with this offense. I mean, who knows? They could jump on him, right? Like, he might go from back-to-back 10 strikeout performances to giving up 10 runs in the first inning tomorrow. So who knows? But I just worry about Sonny Gray against that lineup a little bit. So I'll pick the White Sox tomorrow, but I agree with Matt. I think Red Sox will take Thursday. I think Suarez will do just fine against that lineup. He, by the way, he's the most unbothered human in that dugout, just smacking away on a PB&J while the Red Sox are scoring 14 runs. So he looks like a guy who's not afraid to go up against Luis Castillo on Thursday. So looking like it'll be a series split, but again, hope I'm wrong. Would love to see a sweep, but we'll see what happens. We will be back on the air after Thursday's game, so we'll take the night off tomorrow, back Thursday night, so keep an eye on your YouTube feeds for when we go live, and love to have you guys hang out with us as always. Always been a great conversation in the chat rooms.